Well, now, when it comes to the breeding time, what I like to do is come the end of March, when you know, it's actually the cock's song that brings the hen into breeding condition. The hen, the cock, will stand and he'll just pull himself out of all shape with his song. And it's that brings the hen into breeding condition. So I usually keep the cock and the hen side by side with a full partition. And after a week then, I pull the partition out roughly about a half an inch. And the cock and the hen will be able to see each other and he'll start to feed the hen. So I leave them like that for about a week. And then I take out the sliding partition and I put in a wire partition. And he'll actually feed her through the wire. And you'll know that everything is progressing.
That they're taking to
that one they're about. Taking.
Does it ever happen that they don't?
Oh, quite often. You'd imagine it would. And then the usual thing is in for the hen. It's the hen that'll fight and actually chase and maybe kill a cock if you left them, if you didn't separate them again. It's the hen that really turns. But once you get them used to through the wire cages and that, you can put in the nest then, and she'll go ahead and the cock will actually tread the hen probably there immediately when you let them in. So you know everything is all right.
Do you actually make a nest for them, in other words?
No, just start it off with a nest and we put a bit of felt.
You just put in a plastic cup?
A plastic cup. Like that. Put in a bit of felt into the bottom of it and just tack it down with a bit of thread and put in the nesting material then.
What is it?
You buy nesting material, old moss or anything like that, and to buy them now, you can buy them now made up in little things like, and it's cleaned and that, and old feathers, anything like that, hair, horse hair or anything like that, and they'll build their nest, and all going well then you should have an egg maybe within 6 or 7 days.
Both birds build?
Oh, both birds will build and carry, yeah. And when the first egg is laid then, we usually take out the egg, and substitute it with a dummy egg.
Why?
And, well, if they were left, sometimes you get a hen, and a hen will go to, she'll sit tight on after the first, or after probably after the second egg. And which means then after 14 days, you'd have two birds out today. You'd have a bird out tomorrow and you'd have a bird out the next day. So by taking out the first three eggs that's laid and replacing them with a dummy egg, and then on the morning that the fourth egg is to be laid, you take out the dummy eggs and replace her own eggs. So she's sitting tight and then the eggs will all hatch out the one day and the youngsters all have the same. They're all the one size and they'll be all there gape for food. For normally you'd have one youngster or two youngsters 2 days older and they'd be gaping and getting all the food. So it helps out in that.
But I thought it was the nature of eggs that they had to be kept warm when they were hatching. How do you substitute for the hen?
No. Once the egg doesn't need to... It only has to be kept warm when she is actually after sitting on it. Now, after 2 or 3 days, if she got off the eggs... What we call them, they're dead and shell, they're chilled, that they're no use. But once they're, when you take them out the day that you can keep them, you can keep them for days, you can keep them for a week. It's only after them being started that the embryo starts to form that a cold chill then will do the damage.
Will kill the bird in the shell.
But you have to watch, because sometimes you'll get a cock that'll actually annoy the hen and maybe chase her off the nest. And that would happen, that you'd get eggs that would be chilled. She'd be off the eggs for maybe a night, and you chill. So you have to watch, and if you get a cock, some people don't leave the cock in at all. They just leave the cock in to thread the hen and to get the eggs fertile and to take the cock out. But I don't like to do that. I leave the cock in, and if everything is going all right, I leave all right to itself. It's only if you get a cock that is annoying the hen, or getting her off the nest or anything like that, well, then the damage can be done. So you'd separate her, put the slide back in and put the cock into his own cage.
Do you ever get a lazy hen that can't be bothered feeding her chicks?
Oh, quite often. And in fact, you'd have to, last year now I had to foster young ones out to another nest. You'll often get, it's quite a common occurrence to get a lazy hen that just won't feed.
And what happens?
We call them non-feeders.
Do the cocks get upset at that?
No, if you have a good cock, he'll feed. But sometimes you get them and you just have to foster them out.
Well, I kept pigeons as a teenager, and I suppose I always had the interest in them. And a couple of years ago, I was down at a farm near Lusk, and the man there had an aviary, and I told him that I would be interested in, at some stage, starting into birds. So he told me when I was ready to start to come along, and he would give me any encouragement he could.
And did he?
He did indeed, yes, and he started me off with my first pair and told me where I could get some more. And I joined the Irish Native Bird Keepers Society, and everybody there has been very helpful getting me birds.
What do you get out of it?
I don't know what I get out of it, really. I get great satisfaction out of it. And I work at night time, which means I'm free during the day. And I find it a fascinating pastime. I'm looking forward now to breeding the birds.
And you enjoy just looking at them. Do you enjoy listening to them?
Well, their native birds are not very melodious. You want canaries for singing, but yes, I suppose they're in their own way. They have an attraction.
Brendan, how have you reacted to this extraordinary turn of events?
Well, I must say I never liked the idea of a bird in a cage, and it wouldn't even have a budgie. But I find that they are fascinating, and what I find more than anything is the interest and the love everybody has, the people that are belong to the different societies, and the way the thought that they put into looking after and developing the bird, and they're so contented, the birds. They seem to really thrive in it. We have one fella, Charlie, we give them all names because we've got children. And of course, they take a great interest. But I think that it's more than anything is that it's the bird seems still so free. The cages aren't small. And when you see them here, they're in small cages, obviously. Couldn't have them large flights. But we have them in different extended aviaries. And people put, like you put in for their nesting. And to watch them nesting, the materials that's put in for them, and to see the beautiful work that goes into building the nest. But not only that, they have flowers and trees growing all around them. They're able to feed on the grubs, and they're protected, but yet in their own environment. So they're not captives. And you don't feel that poor thing going around there endlessly flying in the one circle. They're not. They seem to, as say, be relaxed and contented there, and they're ready to be.
The birds in the wild, really, because they don't have to go hunting for their food.
Yeah, but
they
it makes
always
you
have clean water.
It makes you interested in the other birds too. Like, we're always interested in birds in the wild, but it makes you become more aware of them, and therefore now, even now, whereas before I was put food out for the birds because I liked animals in general, but now I'd always remember the birds in particular. You know, and I think that you sort of think to yourself, gosh, when you hear now of the farmers digging up all their hedgerows and the birds, then what will they feed on? And we take them so much for granted, and yet each individual bird has such beauty of its own. So I think it makes you more aware, and particularly if children could see more of this sort of thing, they would be more aware.
You find the birds are a kind of focal point in the family, and that there's a cementing factor in it.
Yes, it's we have four children, and their interests are very varied, but probably the one interest that they all have is the birds. Everyone wants to see and make sure that they have food and they have clean water and that there are no cats around. The cats are chased out of the garden.
Although we have a cat of our own that doesn't go near them, just has a look and takes an interest and will wander off.
Well, he was persuaded the first day not to go near them, and he hasn't gone near them since.
But they do, like in the morning, say, how are the birds? And in the cold weather, you're wondering how they are, and they're kind of
so the water freezes.
We brought them in. into the garage. You know, the garage is turned over to an aviary because the aviary itself wasn't protected enough outside. We changed the garden and it wasn't protected. We felt, but the weather gets severe and scary. It's like the wind comes up pretty strong.
We're going to build a bigger aviary in March, please God. We intend building a big aviary.
But I know I never thought I'd get as interested in birds. Animals, yes, we have dogs and cats and rabbits, so I like that sort of thing. But birds, I never thought. Like to see, yes, and to observe. But personally, I could spend the day here. And I sort of feel sorry that I didn't make our children, one got to a party, another one is studying, sort of felt, well, you could have left the study and come. Because I didn't think it would be so interesting.
Well, now, that's the training. When they're about 6 weeks old, we hang those training cages on that, and they get used to going in and out. And then when they're used to going in and out, we take the cage off and handle them and get them going from perch to perch.
You simply move your hand from
one side to the other, or a training stick, like, you know.
And what's the idea of this?
Well, the judge has a judging stick when he's judging them. And, I mean, he's looking at this side of the bird, and if he wants to look at the other side, he just puts in the... See the way the bird is actually turning? And the whole thing is to get a bird steady. And, that is a nice bird. It has a nice round head. And the eyes are well set, centred. And the wings must just come tip to tip, just at the top of the tail. Now, if those wings crossed, they'd have bad wing carriage. And the tail must just come down into a nice, what they call is a pipe tail. It's like the stem of a pipe. Now, some of the ones, now you get them, and they'd have, just show you one here now, and it hasn't got a very good tail. Now, you can see the difference there. That has a sort of a fan tail. It's not near as tight. And one of the wings is dropped. See the way it has dropped now in comparison to the...
Is there anything you can do about that?
Not really. It's in the breeding.
So what will you do with that bird?
Well, I just won't breed from that hen now. And really, it's the hen that passes on the type. The type of bird you want. You must have a hen with good type. Now, the size is born by the cock. You have to have a good big cock to pass. It's the cock that passes the size on. But it's really the hen that you want to get the type.
Well, are there, like in racehorses, are there great sires and great dams?
Oh, yes. There's one green cock over here. And that green cock there is as good as any hen. Because that cock will go over and it'll actually pit the young ones on the top of the head until they gape for food. And he'll pump food into them. That is a marvellous cock there. Now, you'll get hens, and they're lazy hens. They'll come off and they'll pick for themselves and they'll get on and they might feed one youngster or two youngsters. And if the other ones are not gaping, they just won't get any food. And they're left trailing behind. So if you have a good cock, he'll feed, and they'll feed all the youngsters.
In the summertime, most of the birds are fed during the breeding season. They're fed on soft food, which they rear the young with. And we soak the canary seed, the ordinary canary, mixed canary that we buy, or a plain canary. We can soak it overnight with hot water, and it bursts the seed. It helps the parent of the bird to feed the young bird, that you don't have hard seed. And some of the birds may die if they can't break the seed to feed the youngsters. So it's mostly soft feed throughout the summer and the hard seed in the winter, with a little bit of soft feeding on and off. But the soft feed we use, we import, it's imported through the pet shops. It's an egg food, biscuit, and some brown bread they mix in it. But most of the fanciers in the country at the moment make their own. They save up the hard afters from at home. They keep it till it gets hard, and then they put it into a liquidizer. They mix it up. They mix a bit of egg food. They boil an egg and hard boiled eggs. They mix it up with break up biscuits, the arrowroot biscuit, and they bake it to take the moisture out of it, that it won't go mildew, and then they can use it for whatever proportion they need to feed the bird with. And they can mix a bit of ordinary seed or soak seed with the soft feeding, it makes it a little bit more attractive for the bird to pick it.
We give them the basic diet now is four parts canary to one part of red rate. But then 2 days a week I give them conditioned seed, and it's a mixture of all different classes of seed. And we get the blue maw and Quaker tonic grains and easy soak. Now, when the young ones, the babies are out, I soak seed for 48 hours. I have jam jars there and I want to mate them like, and get them. And it's 48 hours. And they love that. And they'll feed the young ones. But chickweed now is a marvellous green food. And as long as you can get chickweed, it'll, they love to feed. And I have young ones there, and their crops would be full of green, for the parents that feed them green in preference to anything else. But then we give them hard-boiled egg. You boil an egg for at least 20 minutes until it's really hard-boiled, and put it through a sieve, and then mix it with an egg food that you buy in the things, Pecov or some of those, like, you know. And you give them that twice a day. And bread and milk. Cut up little dices of bread and milk, and sprinkle a little bit of maw seed on it. But then you give them tonics, like I give them Abidex drops to keep them in condition, like, you know.
That's what you give babies.
That's what you give babies, yeah. But there again, like, it's the same now, as I mentioned to you, chickweed, dandelion is a great green food. I mean, the iron content and that in it is great for them. But there again, you have to be very, very careful where you go out and pick that. You just can't walk out along the road or into a field now and pick green food and say, well, I bring that home for the birds, because you don't know what's after being sprayed on it. Even months previous, it has happened that fanciers have wiped out their whole thing by bringing in green food that has been contaminated with sprays and insecticides.
Can you pick it and wash it?
You can wash it, but there again, some of these sprays go right down into them. So you have to be very careful. I'm lucky now that there's a man that keeps birds, and he has a big garden, and he has oceans of chickweed, and he wouldn't let spray into the garden at all. So I'm very lucky in that respect. Like, other than that, like the lads in the city now, they have to go into the greengrocer shop and depend on cabbages and lettuce and that for the green food.
Yeah, the colour feeding, most canary breeders would call it careful red or red pepper, which they use for colour feeding Yorkshire canaries, colour feeding Norwich canaries, and they colour feed most of the native people that breed for mules, say the goldfinch canary. They colour feed them to bring up the colour, the nice rich colour, which makes the bird more attractive looking for show.
And these are peppers?
Pepper. It's a red pepper. It's ground down, and again, we do have it's bought in through the pet shops from England. It comes in from foreign, and it's sold in grams. And you mix the red pepper powder is mixed with the soft feeding, and the careful red is sold in liquid, and it's mixed with the drinking water. So if you have a bird that's, you've got to get them at the right time to colour feed them. If you, say, feed the birds the second week of their molt, you're going to have a bird with colour feeding in the feather, and colour feeding that won't take to the feather that has already started to grow before you got the colour feeding. So you're going to have a spotty coloured bird. So it's better to feed them before they start molting, at least a week, 2 weeks before they start molting, that you'll have the bird throughout, because it gets into the bloodstream and it comes out in the feather. So this is where you have the rich colour. And most of the fanciers now, in the new colour, the reds as they call them, they go for colour. And the Norwich goes for colour, and the Yorkshire goes for colour. And again, we come back to the mule and hybrid, they're also colour fed. So if you have a team of birds that you want to show for an exhibition, you must colour feed them to get the proper tone in the bird and the condition.
It's a pepper, Spanish pepper you mix with the food that brings out this red in them.
There's a red glow through the feathers, particularly at the throat.
There is, yes. But that's that bird now is not well colour fed, you know. It should be shown all through. There should be no breakage at all on them, you know.
Well, the red first originated over in Holland and Belgium. And strange to say, it was a priest. His name I just forget at the present time. But he took a great interest in these here. And the red canary is bred down from the American red hooded siskin. You mate a red hooded siskin to a small good type canary. And this is the way the red canary was first started off.
They're a beautiful deep pink, really. You don't see these too many of these in public, do you?
Well, no.
Specialist bird.
They are a specialist bird. The colour is really bred in them. And in judging red canaries, 100 points is allowed overall in the bird, but 50 points out of 100 is for colour itself. Then the other 50 points is divided up for legs, size of beak, where your eyes placed, what your head's like, what your wings are like, and carriage of your bird, feather of your bird. All this comes into it.
Well, they originally came from the Canary Islands, like. They were brought in and they were domesticated. And they were bred. Now, I mean, the original canary was an old green canary. It wasn't what we know now as the colours that are in them now. That's a cinnamon there now. And that's a variegated buff. And that's a variegated yellow. You can see that the yellow is much stronger. And that's a cinnamon marked. And that's a three-part stark. Because when you look at it, you can see that the green is dominant by three parts. So that's what's shown as a three parts. That one now is only a little bit of yellow under the vent. So we'd really class that as what, a foul.
F-O-U-L.
Yeah. It's just a foul colour that's in it, like away from the green.
There's lots of fanciers that do not like keeping birds for exhibition. They like keeping birds in the navy and trying to cross one with another. They produce what is known as a hybrid. And this is a beautiful bird. And this is the whole interesting thing about our fancy. Is you always try to do better each year and better and better, and you always try to breed something else that no one else has bred. Matter of fact, a friend of mine was on the phone to me from England last night, and we should have saw for the first time, but I think we'll see probably next year, black canaries on show. All black canaries. Well, this chap owns two or three pet shops. And a young man came into him one day and he said, would he like to purchase some canaries? Oh, he says, I'm packed out with canaries. I can't take any more. What kind of canaries have you anyway for sale? Oh, he says, black ones. He says, say that again. He says, black ones. I'm afraid you haven't got black ones, he said. Have you painted them or have you dyed them? No, he says, I have black ones. You're not kidding me. No, I'm not kidding you. Where do you live? He told him where he lived. So he couldn't wait until closing time with his shop till he got into the car and he went round. And really, there were black canaries. There's no question about that. He saw the pairs, how they were bred and everything else, and he purchased two young ones and he paired those together. And he did not breed a black himself. But he went back to the chap who had sold him these two blacks. One was a really dominant black and the other was a splash black. When he went back to him the second year, the chap had also bred two more black canaries. And with the result, I think he paid a large sum of money. But now he has got this pair that is breeding the blacks, and he's interbreeding his young ones together, and he reckons that he will produce really
outstanding dominant black canaries.
You can breed, if you're looking for a particular thing in a bird, you can pair a father to daughter, which is much better. I'd prefer to pair a father to daughter than a brother to sister. But you can, if you're looking for a particular thing, but it's not good to go too close. So that's why we have them all wrong. And you keep a breeding register and you know the offspring of each bird, so you won't breed, unless you're breeding for a particular purpose, say for a head or a feather type or something like that. And there again, you always breed buff to yellow. You never breed two yellows or two buffs. You breed buff to yellow or yellow to buff. Because other than that, you get what the fancy calls is a duster. You get a bird with real... You see, the yellow has a real fine feather, whereas the buff has a sort of a coarser feather. So if you put two buffs together, you're going to get a real coarse feather. So you always... It's the practice in the fancy to breed buff to yellow and yellow to buff.
Hmm. Well, has this breeding and inbreeding and interbreeding gone about as far as it can go, do you reckon?
Well, I would say it has now. I would say it has. Like, most people have tried everything, you know, double yellows, double buffs, you know, even breeding with another species. That's a Norwich board, a Norwich canary, along with a border to get roundness and size, you know. So I think everybody has tried, or most people have tried that, you know.
So you think the fancy is at an end, really?
I would think so, but that's where you're really getting, you're losing out, you see, they're breeding with different species to try and get size, you know, and length and what have you. But
you mean they're going away from their own species?
They're going away from their own species. I reckon so. I reckon so.
And that's a bad thing.
That's a bad thing. Oh, definitely it is. It is. It is.
They're like humans. They're open to all ailments. They can have asthma, they can get pneumonia, they can get loose bowels, and they can be too tight. Like, there's oceans that they can get TB, avian TB. There's numerous things that they can get, just like humans. But you'll have your own little ways of counteracting those and your own little treatments that you have. And as regards, like, I don't know whether a vet... You can send them off and have them tested and that for different diseases. But really, like, they're so small that unless a vet specialised in it, there wouldn't be much point in going to them for birds, like, you know.
You reckon you'd know more about it yourself?
You possibly would. Once you breed birds and that, you'll get to know their ailments yourself, and you'll know how to counteract it. Cleanliness is the main thing in any bird house, like, you know, to keep it clean and keep it well disinfected. Now, in the summertime, you can get what they call red mite. And that gets into all little wood crevices in the timber. So there, when you're making your units, you'll glue and have them really dead tight and filled and painted, that there's no place that the red mite can get into. But it can come in on greens that you'd bring in. You could bring a bird to a show and it could be... pick it up there. So usually what you do when you come back to a show, you'd keep your birds separately for a while and you'd spray them and that, and you get stuff then and you go around your cages. It's usually in the hot weather that this little mite will come out in its numbers. You won't see it during the day. Your cages will be perfect during the day unless you look for little telltale signs. But it's at night that these little red mite comes out, and they live on the blood of the bird. And they'd leave a bird anemic in no time if they get into big numbers. So the main thing is keep your birdhouse clean and disinfected at all times.
And when you bring them back from a show, you treat them like the astronauts?
You would. You'd put them, separate them over, and you give them a spraying. And give them a little dusting of powder. And after a day or two, then you put them back in and you're sure that they're all right.
The better, even out in the aviary, in the garden, there, it hardens them up. And I feel like if you have them... closed up, the birds will go into a soft molt, and if you have any heat at all with them, they start losing and dropping the feathers. So the birds are much hardier and healthier with even the frost and the cold. And native birds are much the same. They, being an outdoor bird, they're kept in aviaries, outdoor aviaries. So other than that, the birds today, the standard is very high and in very good condition. So this is the weather really for showing the birds they're up to their peak condition for showing.
What about the allegation of cruelty of using native birds for cage varieties?
Well, you can walk around here, and I don't know how many birds I've had a look at today, I've judged today. You know, it must be between 200 or 300, and I haven't seen one bird yet that looks unhappy. You know, so I don't think it's cruel. The birds seem all very, very content. They wouldn't breed so freely in captivity, you know, if they didn't enjoy it.
Are they ever allowed to fly?
A lot of these are bred in aviaries. You know, it's the easiest way to breed crosses such as this are in aviaries. But, you know, I can assure you, an unhappy bird certainly wouldn't breed.
Yeah, well, if they're actually bred in an aviary or in a cage, I can't see any cruelty into it. Because as it is now, I mean, between our whole environment has been, I mean, the countryside has been denuded, and our own native birds, I mean, their habitat has just been pushed off. They're just dying off between fertilizers and insecticides being sprayed. I mean, our own native bird population is getting very, very, very small. I mean, if things keep going on the way they are, they'll just die out. So, I mean, they'll have to rely on breeders then to keep things going.
What native birds are caged?
Usually the goldfinch. Well, you have the siskin, you can get the siskin, the goldfinch, the chaffinch, the bullfinch. Oh, there's numerous, the majority of them now can be caged. But there's new laws coming out now, like that they have to be bred in confinement before you can show them.
As your birds here are, these
they have to be bred in confinement and closed around so that they can be shown. It's in England now at the present. Now, you can't even sell a bird, a native bird, if it's not closed around, to prove that it has been bred in captivity.
This is a question that has come up dozens and dozens of times, and I don't think so, because if you look at our native birds, such as the bullfinch and the goldfinch, people tell me it's wrong to catch birds and put them in the cage. Now, I don't care what bullfinch or what goldfinch you will catch in the wild, have a look at it, and have a look at a good fancier who has a real good one, and maybe he has it in captivity, reared in an aviary over years, but you have a look at the condition of his bird to the wild bird, and you will see a vast difference. So therefore, keeping birds in a cage does not do them any harm. That is wrong.
Eddie, how consistent are the judges?
Well, in this country, well, if we take the Irish fancy, it's very consistent because we have all our judges are Irish judges. They don't go international, or we can't have international judges because it's not a standard board in the international countries. But if we take the native board, which is the goldfinch, linnet, bullfinch, and chaffinch, if you have a good bird, say a good goldfinch or a good linnet, a good siskin, that it's nearly consistent, even internationally, because the judge looks for the good size, big bird, and good colour, good feather. And if the bird is anyway big at all, it's size they go for. So it's nearly consistent in the natives. But if you go to borders, it's up and down, because one end of the country, the judge may go for a large board. In the north of Ireland, may go for a smaller board. England, it's a standard board, but sometimes it's consistent and sometimes it's not. It depends on the judge. Even the local, any of the local people who are well up in any of the fancy, say the border, they nearly have a good eye for it. They know where the good board is, and they nearly pick it out even before the show starts, before the judge would judge it, they'd say, well, that's a good bird, and we'd it will go a long way, and it usually does.
Well, we have, you know, the same, well, obviously we have the same native breeds over in Wales. That's what I specialise in, you know, and I was over in Balbriggan earlier on this year, and they asked me to come over and judge this show.
And you breed from your own native birds, the same ones they breed from here?
Yes.
The finches mainly? And
yeah, yeah.
So you've judged this class, have you? What are they?
These are hybrids, crosses between two British birds.
And how many were in this class?
There's only four in this class.
And you have judged them, you've awarded the prizes. On what basis now, tell me?
Well, you know, on what is the best example of its cross. You know, what we have here are four different crosses.
They're all different colours?
Yeah, they're all different. Well, they're all off different parentage. What we, the bird that's won is a canary cross with a bullfinch hen. The second one is a linnet cock cross with a bullfinch hen. Third is a goldfinch cock cross with a linnet hen. And the fourth is a redpoll cock cross with a linnet hen. They're all different species, and what you have to look for is the bird has to show both its parentage, and then you have a look at, you know, type and quality.
And what made that the first prize winner?
Well, rarity is one of the things. It's an extremely difficult cross to achieve.
Why is that? The birds don't take to one another.
Well, we just don't know why it is so difficult. If it was easy, there'd be a lot more of them around. You know?
And a lot of people try for that particular cross.
A lot of people try for that particular cross. The cross is normally very valuable, but unfortunately that is happens to be a hen. The cockbird is much more colourful and much more valuable.
Well, do these birds breed on and tell?
No. These birds are all sterile. All they're bred for is exhibition.
And do they sing as well as their parents?
The cocks will sing. The hens don't sing at all.
And do they? Which song do they sing? Do they sing the song of the father or the dam?
That can vary. If they're kept with canaries, although there's no canary in them, a lot of them will turn to canary song.
They will imitate?
Yeah, imitate, yeah.
And what do you look for now in judging these?
Well, actually, you look for, the best way to describe it is a tennis ball and a golf ball on top of that. Everything must be round. That's what I'd be looking for in them, you know.
Regardless of size?
Regardless of size, you know. You get, you can breed them real big, but still they have the roundness on the body and the round head coming from the eyes, coming from the top of the beak right over the head. Must be round, you know.
Well, you two alongside one another here, and one's about twice the size of the other by the look of them.
That's right. The Gloucester is the smallest bird nearly in the hobby, you know. And there again, you must look for roundness again. And a straight line from the back of the head right down to the tips of the wings, you know. There must be no hollow in the back at all. And then under the throat must be all round again, from under the throat down right under these to the legs. And good feather quality, you know.
What way should the wings lie?
The wings mustn't be crossed. They must lie perfect just over the tail. They shouldn't be overlapped at the tail. That is a fault in them, you know. And it takes so many pints away from them when you would be judging them. Actually, now it's hard to judge that bird. He's after washing himself, you know. But he is definitely the best Gloucester on show here today.
When you say he's washed himself, how do you mean?
He has put his head out through the drinker here and lashed himself with water. You know, you can see it here on his head there. You see where he's all wet on the top of his head. You see, we don't give them water before the show to stop them from doing that, or they wouldn't have a chance when you'd be judging them. So the very minute they get it then after judging, they'll have a good wallop in it.
How important is it, the way the bird shows himself? I believe they're trained to...
Oh, you'll get one the very minute you see it. You know, he's well trained. He'll keep just hopping from perch to perch, perfect condition, you know. And he'll even show himself to you. and you'll get the bird in that's not used to being in a show cage, and he's all the time fluttering up and down. You can't judge him, you know, he's wild actually. But the real champion, we'd say, that's going in to show his birds, he has them trained to perfection, that he knows the way what you're looking for, and it makes the job easier for you.
You know, have you ever come across a bird that knew it was at a bird show?
Oh, yes. Oh, you'd meet them that know the very minute you take them up. They put one show to perfection. They just hop from perch to perch and even stand the way you could look at them and before they'd move on again.
Do you get much disagreement with your judgments?
Well, I haven't so far, and I hope today is not going to be the first day. You would. You know, you would meet disagreements. You'd meet people that say, could you explain why? Yeah. That bird won at such a show and he's only second today, you know. And then you compare the two birds. And you show him the points and 9 times out of 10 he'll agree with you, you know.
Do you work on points out of 100 or anything?
You will, yeah. To get so many points for head, body, cleanliness, show cage, you know. So actually, you know, you might get a bird with crossed wings and he might have a perfect body, but you only can allow so many points for the crossed wings, you know, if you take them points off him. And he could win better another bird, his body might be perfect, his head might be perfect, eye would be perfect, you know. So that's the way it goes.
What do you look for in the eye?
A nice clear eye, just a small bit of brow over the eye. Small bit. You must show a bit of brow, you know. Whereas the border now, they must show a clear eye. No brow at all. Well, in the Gloucester, you look for that bit of brow. And a wide, round head on the consort. That's a consort. Now you get a corona, which is a crested. Which is a lovely bird too. You get perfect crest, you know. Just comes down over the eye, halfway over the eye, and it mustn't be broken in any part, you know. And a dead centre in it, going to all angles and coming down over the beak.
This is as if he had a round hat on his head, brown hat.
That's right, that's correct.
Yes.
And they are really a lovely bird too, the corona.
How do you know what sex a bird is?
Well, the only true way is by their song. The cock sings and the hen doesn't. But you'll often get a hen that will have a little bit of a song early on. But that's the true way. But you will know after a while, because a cock is more active. It's much more active on the perch, jumping around and perking at her. A hen is inclined to be quiet and sit on the perch.
Can you tell the sex of these birds, really, just by looking at them?
I can in Yorkshire, but red canaries is very, very hard to do. They're very hard to do. Sometimes you're able to tell by the paler colour, the female, not like human life, where the female is better decorated than the male, but in the bird life, the female is weaker decorated than the male.
Can you tell by the voice?
Oh, you can tell by the voice, all right, because... And a female, like human life, a female scolds all the time, the same thing. The male is always there, looking sprightly and attractive at all times.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.